Hey everybody, welcome back. This is Broken to Barbell. I'm Tanner.
And I'm Sam.
And I'm Carly.
Hi everybody. First off, we want to start up with an update on the walk that we are participating in. Carly, I'll let you talk more about that.
So after the last podcast on suicide prevention, a guy from my gym, Joey Reed, reached out to me and asked if we would be interested in putting a team in the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's Out of the Darkness Community Walk, which is a suicide prevention walk on August 25th in Pittsburgh. And we've had a huge response already. So big thank you to everyone on our team. So far, there's still time to join our team. You can find the link either in my Instagram bio or the podcast Instagram bio. And I just wanted to give a shout out to everyone so far that's already joined the team. So thank you, Andrew Twigg, Brittany Leshin, Joey Reed, Tegan Labatch, Emily Jack, Micah Moore, Josh Conroy, and Josh Elsass. So there's still time to join. It's on August 25th from 9 to 1.
Thanks, guys. That's really awesome that we got so much support so quickly.
It's really crazy. I set our team goal at $200 and we're almost to $1,500.
Wow. That's really exciting and like really, really good.
We also had a really good response to that podcast too.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely be doing more real life things that need to be discussed podcasts coming up.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And this week, as always, we have a very special guest. Special guest, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Nicole Ferrier. I guess I always hate to say that I'm a bikini competitor first, but I am a MPC bikini competitor. I am an online coach and trainer, and I am a certified personal trainer, and I also have my degree in exercise science, and fitness is kind of my jam. So
that's awesome. Sam, how do we know Nicole?
Nicole is my coach. I have talked about her a couple times on the podcast so far. And she, in the fall, will be coaching me in a bikini prep. So that's why I thought it would be cool to have her on and kind of talk about it. Because it's not – I don't know if a lot of our listeners really know, like, about bikini competitions. So I thought it would be a cool interview.
Yeah, and thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. So how did you get into, bodybuilding and bikini competitions in the first place?
So I started going to the gym in my late teens. I was always really athletic. I was a gymnast growing up and I did gymnastics for 10 years. And I was always like a scrawnier build. I was dealing with a poor relationship with food at the time. And I'm also just pretty tall and long for a gymnast. And people always used to pick on me saying, "You're like 5'7", how are you a gymnast?" But I will say I was pretty good considering that I was a giant. And I went into the gym and I saw all these machines and weight training. And I didn't realize that people did this to change their bodies before. At the time, I was just doing a lot of cardio, restricting my calories a lot to look athletic because I thought that's what you needed to do. And I always wanted to look like an athlete because I felt like I just looked thin. And at the time, one of my coaches was actually a fitness Olympia competitor. And there's different divisions when it comes to bodybuilding. And she was very muscular and very impressive. And she used to always tell me, you need to eat and you need to lift weights to get strong. And over the years, especially as I went into my college years, I pursued a degree in exercise science and kind of just self-taught myself how to lift. I didn't really have anyone to teach me. I just had really good mind-body connection with my body from the years of gymnastics. And I was on YouTube and I saw that bikini competitions was a thing, and I missed competing in gymnastics at the time because my university did not have a team because I went to a small private university. And yeah, I started to compete, and I competed at my first show in 2015. I prepped myself for that show. That was a hot mess, but I just remember competing, hopping off stage, and I was like, wow, I want to do this forever.
That's really awesome.
Yeah, my story is a little different, I feel like, compared to some people who saw it just on social media. I actually, at the time, it's so funny because I look back, I'm like, wow, my coach competed at the Olympia several times, and that I had no idea because bodybuilding was so like bizarre. No one talked about it ever.
That's crazy. So
do you want to explain to everyone kind of like what bikini competitions / bodybuilding competitions are for those who probably don't know?
Yeah, so bikini competitions and bodybuilding competitions are competitions where you are judged on your physique. In a way, people will say it's kind of like a beauty pageant in a way, but there's a lot of dedication that goes into what these athletes are bringing to the stage. There's different divisions for men and women. The men have a men's physique that they can compete in, and I'm going from least muscular to most muscular, so they can compete in men's physique or classic physique or bodybuilding. Now, females actually have a few more divisions that they can compete in, and the least muscular is bikini, and I say that in a kind of laughing way because bikini is looking pretty muscular now, but bikini is the division that I compete in, and that's the least muscular. And then we have figure, fitness, physique, and they used to have women's bodybuilding, but they actually got rid of the division.
And how many shows have you done, and how long have you been competing?
I have done a total of 16 NPC shows, with 4 of those being national shows. So there are different levels when it comes to competition. And I started competing in 2015. That was my first show. And I think I was 20.
Oh, okay.
Pretty young.
And you kind of mentioned about athletic stuff and looking athletic. So what were really are your goals with your competitions?
So my competitions, I think, with being an athlete growing up, I was used to being in the gym, especially as a gymnast. I was used to being in the gym 4 hours a day. And I was always really competitive, very structured. I love to train. And once gymnastics was kind of taken away from me, and it wasn't, I don't know, I identified with that sport so much because it was my life for 10 years and I was coaching it. And once that was removed, I didn't know what to do with myself, and I didn't really like other sports. I thought about getting into like diving and stuff in college, but it just wasn't the same. I love performing. I love girly stuff too. So the sparkly bikinis and all that was very attractive to me. But I also just love the fact that these women looked strong. And that was something that I never had. I felt like I didn't look strong, but like I knew I was a strong person, if that makes sense.
No, I think that makes total sense. It's just interesting how everybody kind of gets these interests and starts pursuing them, and hearing how they do that.
Yeah, and I just needed something to work for again, and I needed longevity. I started my gymnastics career when I was 11, which is considered very, very late, but I progressed pretty well considering, and was starting bodybuilding, it felt like a nice fresh start because now I was on the complete opposite spectrum. I got interested when I was 19, and that's a baby in the industry. And I was like, wow, this is nice. I'm not an old grandma.
So what does it take to step on stage? Like, I know it is a lot of work. Can you kind of guide us through like what it really takes to step on stage?
Absolutely. So a lot of people, well, I'm from the Midwest, just like you guys. So a lot of people will not necessarily understand the level of leanness of a competitor is, unless you were to see them in person. It's very extreme. It's almost cartoonish how these competitors look. And you can look through social media with how lean and defined they look, and people don't necessarily realize everything that goes into that look and how extreme it really is. So for reference, a healthy female tends to carry a body fat percentage of 18 to 25%, and these competitors that you're seeing are competing at 8 to 12% body fat on stage. So if that gives you an idea of how lean these individuals are. So what goes on for a bodybuilding competition is you're judged on your symmetry, you're judged on your body, you're judged on your whole presentation, and that requires 24-hour job of monitoring your training, your nutrition, and sleep and stress for weeks on end. So preps for competitions, if you're lucky and you're already a relatively lean individual, you might only need 12 weeks. I've had preps where I've gotten lean in 16 weeks. I've had preps where I've needed 22 weeks. And it's a slow, steady process of weight loss. And for most people, you're actually taking a healthy physique and forcing it to lose weight to look this extreme. And I say extreme because it's not maintainable, but it's truly fascinating and amazing what the body can achieve through extreme structure and consistency.
Wow.
So I think that would be the main things. Other than that, you're going to have to be really dedicated to training. Most of these competitors are training at least 5 days a week.
Yeah.
For weeks on end. And not only that, competitors that you see on, you know, the Olympia stage, that's years and years of hard work. I can probably guarantee that most of them didn't take more than 2 weeks off unless it was some sort of injury.
That's crazy. It's just like such a huge level of dedication. I couldn't even imagine.
Yeah, it's very consuming. And I competed in college, and it can even impact, well, it does impact your social life as well, because in a society where food is very celebrated on many occasions. And I remember being 2 weeks out from a competition, and it was my 21st birthday. It didn't matter. I didn't have a drink. So if that shows you the mindset of a competitor, that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But I think it's worth it. You learn so much about yourself when you are so dedicated to a goal, because unlike other athletics, this requires for you to like monitor your nutrition to a whole nother level.
So with the nutrition piece, for yourself personally, do you track your macros or do you do more of the chicken and rice diet?
I love chicken and rice, but I do flexible dieting because I love data and I love numbers. And I feel like kind of going off of just quote unquote isn't the best approach when you could actually have structured data and numbers to play with. And I look at my body like a science experiment. Whenever I'm in prep, I'm like, okay, if I cut like maybe 20 grams of carbs, how is that going to affect this week? How am I going to feel? How am I going to perform? And vice versa with the other macronutrients. So that would be your carbs, proteins, and fats. Some people will also include alcohol, but I don't really include alcohol in prep.
do you still drink at all, or just curious?
I actually don't like the taste of alcohol. I am very lucky that I don't. An occasional glass of wine, but I'm like a little kid in a way. I just don't like the taste of it. I always have like a bitter face unless it's like something super bougie with tons of sugar and it tastes like a slushy, then that's different. But I don't like wine. I don't like beer. Yeah, I would rather have just like Crystal Light because I'm a kid.
Crap, I wish I had that problem.
I know, it's weird. It's weird, especially in college and stuff. It was super weird. People were like, you don't like to go out? I was like, I mean, I wish I liked alcohol, but I don't. Do you guys have Diet Coke?
So if you follow if you're like in the world of bikini competitions and you follow it on social media, you'll see that a lot of people are talking about like hormones and symptoms and stuff. Can you explain kind of what effect bikini competitions do have on like the female body especially?
Sure. I'm going to kind of touch on hormones that affect both bodies, like male and female. The top two that you're going to notice right away is your leptin. So that's your hunger hormone, and it's correlated to fat tissue. So as you're losing fat mass, you are actually decreasing your leptin levels, which is causing you to be hungry a lot. So leptin signals you to eat, and ghrelin is also correlated with that as well. So you're always hungry. You'll hear people in prep saying they eat a meal and they're hungry after. And unless you are a competitor, you don't understand, because the brain is a very powerful thing that is signaling these hormones, and it's signaling that your body's under distress and needs to eat in order to keep you alive. I know that sounds extreme, but that's what's going on with those hormones. And even post-competition, you are dealing with extremely high levels of ghrelin, and your leptin levels are all thrown off as well. So you still have that extreme hunger, and that's why, unfortunately, sometimes you see a big post-show rebound. For females in particular, this is not healthy, and it's not maintainable. Females, we are born to have babies. We are born to carry others. We're born to take care of others. And our body fat, we're made to have more. Now, the reason why is because we have estrogen and progesterone in our body, which signals our menstrual cycle. Now, competitors, a lot of them, when they get lean, including myself, they will lose their menstrual cycle for sometimes a month or two, or sometimes years. And this can actually really affect your body depending on how long you're going through your loss of menstrual cycle, which is actually, it's called amenorrhea. So if you're experiencing amenorrhea for a prolonged period of time, you're putting your body at risk for osteopenia and osteoporosis. Now, if you get osteoporosis, it's not reversible. So sometimes I get nervous when you see competitors that tell me that they haven't had their period for 5 years, because they can develop osteoporosis and develop the bones of an 80-year-old. Also, for females, I find that they have huge mood swings on prep, and that is just due to low levels of estrogen. Low libido would also be connected to that. So if you're in a relationship, it's almost like reverse puberty in a way, because you're losing a lot of body fat. So your body is telling you to not procreate and to not reproduce. So that can really affect relationships when the mind is almost like a 12-year-old girl in a way. It's very bizarre. Like I said, I look at this like a science experiment, but all of these hormone changes, especially for females, it can be dangerous. And I know a lot of people also deal with gut issues, which I'm doing more research into, because this is the first time that I'm actually dealing with some gut issues after a competition. So I know I just threw a bunch of information your way, so feel free to ask me any questions.
Well, so the osteoporosis, you said like they look like they're 80 or whatever. Is that like obviously decades before they're anywhere near 80?
Yes. So you could be 30 and have like the bones of an 80-year-old. This happens with people who deal with anorexia as well. And that's just because of the low body fat and not having your menstrual cycle for so long. Your period, we're supposed to have it. It releases calcium. It allows for you to absorb calcium. And if you don't have period, bones can't even absorb calcium. So a lot of people think they're getting all funny and sneaky with it, with like taking calcium supplements. It's really doing nothing. Your body can't absorb it. You don't have the hormones to even absorb the calcium.
So is there a healthy way to do a bikini competition then, where you're not going to really harm your body like that?
Every female is different with their hormonal health, especially their menstrual cycle. I know of females who have gotten to 8% body fat and had their cycles still, which that's crazy to me. The fact that, you know, they would be able to pass on their genes at that lean of a state and carry a baby. But other females, they actually can lose their cycle at like 20% body fat. It's each female is different with this. And for me, I know I tend to lose my cycle once I'm below 15%. In actual literature, though, it shows under 13% is dangerous for a female. So as long as you're not maintaining it for a prolonged period of time, so I'd say more than 3 months, or that's a little bit shorter considering what you see competitors do, but I would say you don't want to maintain that leanness for more than 3 months, like that state. And you see competitors compete year round, but
wow,
there's different supplementation going on that a lot of people don't talk about in this industry.
That's crazy. I didn't know that before this. Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting.
What
do you do after then? Like when you're done, you know, when you're done with competition, how do you heal?
Every post show is different, I will say. My first one was really like a weird rebound, because I didn't know how to control that hunger feeling, because you always feel hungry. It's bizarre. It's almost like when you were 10 years old and like growing massively, like fast, and you're just like eating everything in the kitchen. It's the same thing. Although you slow down your metabolism so much from a prolonged period of dieting. And so once you reintroduce these calories, you are putting your body prime and ready to put on fat gain like no other. And you will see competitors gain 10 pounds in a week. And unfortunately, a lot of them will say it's water. Half of that is probably fat. Only case scenario where someone can put that much body fat on from an overfeeding period of time. Now, like a normal healthy individual, they couldn't do that. That wouldn't really be possible. But a competitor, it is, because your body is in a survival state. So for me, whenever I'm post-show, because I'm a more seasoned competitor, I like to still track my macros and be on a structure for at least minimal 2 weeks after, but I suggest a month after. This just works for me. Every competitor is different with how they handle their post show. And now I am loosely tracking. So I'm tracking, but you know, if my boyfriend and I want to go out on a date, we go out on a date and I don't pull out my Fitness Pal and I can be more present with him. Or I go out to like a family event, I don't bring my food scale. I just estimate. But if I'm in prep, I do bring my food scale. It's just taking the extremes from prep out of it and making it more balanced. And eventually I'll fully transition out to where I don't use my Fitness Pal, just depending on how long of an off season I'm taking. But I'm taking a pretty long off season considering that I needed more muscle mass. So I'm in a building phase right now.
Okay. Yeah, that feeling hungry thing all the time is something I experience daily without doing all of this.
Oh my gosh, yes. It's like so bizarre too. It's like, I remember there was one show where I always crave protein bars for some reason. Like I cut them out because they're not FDA regulated, so I don't trust the labels. I get super anal. And I ate like 3 Fit Crunch bars, like the full size. And I just had dinner and I was still hungry. I was like, okay, I want ice cream. It's so bizarre.
That sounds really rough.
So, yeah, it's hard to control in a way, but it always helps. Like if you express how you're feeling to other people too. And I'm very lucky because I am a competitor that lives with a competitor. My boyfriend competes. So he understands, and we can really hold each other accountable.
That's helpful, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. To have someone who understands.
Yeah. Although I give them a hard time.
So our final question is, who should compete in a bodybuilding competition? With you explaining all like the highs and lows and the extremes and stuff, you obviously have to have a healthy relationship with yourself, but can you go into like really what it mentally takes and where you should be at in your lifestyle to even think about prepping?
Absolutely. I'm going to talk about a couple different variables. So number one is why you have to ask yourself, why do you want to compete? If you're wanting to compete to get your goal body, don't compete. I'm telling everyone right now, don't compete, because this body that you're going to achieve is, like I said, it's not maintainable. It's like a little action figure. You're not going to keep it forever. Now, if you're wanting to compete, to challenge yourself and your mind and to incorporate a whole nother level of discipline into your life, go for it. If you are wanting to train for an event that isn't as, you know, hard on your joints, like maybe a marathon or a race, go for it. I think that competing is great. I've taken so many valuable lessons away from competing. I mean, it completely changed my life, and made me way more confident in who I am. And in a way, it's my job. So it's truly a great experience competing, health risk aside. So I think if you want to compete, to challenge yourself, train like an athlete, know that this is just for an event, for just a day, then yes, go for it. Now, if you're wanting to compete and be a competitor stage lean year round, no, don't compete. The other thing to consider is finances. A lot of people don't talk about this. It's expensive. It's extremely expensive to compete. It's probably one of the most expensive hobbies. My parents always joke with me. They're like, you choose the most expensive hobbies. You chose gymnastics, which the tuition was through the roof. And then I'm doing this now. Those bikinis that you see on stage for reference, they range on the very low end, $300 upwards to $800.
Just the bikinis themselves.
Just that tiny piece of fabric, correct.
Oh my God. Why?
Because for the most part, they are handmade. They are handmade, hand glued, each one of those crystals. Sometimes the companies will use real Swarovski crystals. For me, I'm very lucky. I work with Angel Competition Bikinis, and I love the company so much. But they put a lot of work into that suit. Like, most of them are handmade, custom to your body. And I think they're very expensive. But like I said, it's like a wedding dress. Like, you are creating this body, so now you're going to want to have a suit that resembles all your hard work. So for the most part, I will say girls will spend that much money on a suit, and it is an investment. That doesn't even include your hair, your makeup, your nails, your heels. That's roughly probably another $300 right there. Your entry fee, which is usually $100, your NPC card, which is another $200 almost, and then coaching fees. You want to make sure that you're working with someone who is looking out for you and your mental and physical health. I always say, though, there's cheaper ways to compete, but at the amateur level, you're not even winning money. You only win money as a pro. And even the pros, like, they kind of break even with how much money they make and spend on traveling and all of that and all the show day fees. So it is very expensive. So if you're not financially stable, competing, just know the stage is always there. You can save up for it and then look at it almost kind of like a wedding day, because it's pretty expensive. I look at my competing personally like a vacation. And an experience, because I remember all my competitions so much, but the cost is similar to a vacation.
I can't even imagine that price too, because even the little things I do, like Spartan training and stuff, it can be up to like $200 a race. So it's not the same.
Yeah.
A lot.
I will say it's more expensive for girls just because of all the glam that's involved. And not to mention, like, those tans that you see, everyone is required, regardless of what your race is, to get those spray tans. And that's just to make your muscles pop under the stage lights. Those tans, I paid $175 at my last national show just for that tan. And the thing is it's required.
That's so crazy.
Yikes. Yes, it's insane. And it's like a spray tan. It's nuts. The other thing to consider before competing is, are you willing to dedicate the amount of time to compete? Like I said, sometimes you're dieting 20 weeks for a competition. That's a good chunk of time. That's more than 4 months of your life, of you being so structured and disciplined and hyper-focused on this goal. It can impact relationships if you have a significant other that doesn't understand, or family that doesn't understand, or friends that don't understand. So are you ready to deal with, you know, the social side of things and being a little bit selfish, unfortunately? Because in a way, bodybuilding is a selfish sport, because everything that you're doing is for your body, for it to look its best for one day.
Yeah.
So that's something to consider. I think the other thing to consider is your relationship with food and your current body. You need to love your body before you start competing. I really need to stress this. Like, if you don't love yourself now, you're not going to love yourself when you're a little tan chicken nugget on stage.
Preach.
You need to love yourself going into this, because your body is all you have, and it's going to, you're demanding so much out of it for prep, and it will fight you every second because it doesn't want to be that way, because you don't have to be that way forever. It's just for a day, and it's just to see all your hard work underneath, like all the muscle mass that you built. So you need to have a good relationship with your body. You need to have a good relationship with food. If you are already dealing with a disordered relationship with food, you need to make sure that you're recovered. Or if you've never had a disordered relationship with food, assume the risk that you might come out of this with a disordered relationship with food, because I've seen that too. And it's very scary. For me, I've dealt with an eating disorder, and I am recovered, but dealing with an eating disorder from the young age of 14, you have to check yourself, and you have to have someone there for you. So like I said, I have a significant other that's very supportive and understanding, and prep can mess with your mind. It can make you develop food rules. It can make you develop a lot of disordered habits that you need to be self-aware of and seek help if you need help. But I always even let my clients know before I take them on for a prep, is I tell them all of this straight up, and I tell them also, are you ready to assume the risk of possibly developing a poor relationship with food? Because if I see the signs, I will cut them off as a coach and refer them out to someone to help them. And that's all I can do, because I am not a mental health professional. But I want all competitors, not just my athletes, but I want all my competitors that are around me to be healthy around food. But the pain is to not be healthy around food. And it's scary, and it's dangerous, and people don't talk about it in the industry. And even the guys have really poor relationships with food, and it's very unfortunate.
Yeah, and that's the importance of hiring a good coach too, and finding somebody that has your best interest at heart, because if you don't have somebody that way, it can just nosedive you into poor eating.
I think it's good that you refer people too out to professionals, like you can see the signs and you're able to do that.
Correct. Like having an eating disorder, it was a blessing and a curse. So it was a curse because, you know, it still bothers me to this day, and it was very exhausting, but it's a blessing because I can see the early signs. I can see the change in behavior. I can see all of the little tiny details that some coaches don't catch on to. And I unfortunately have had people where I've had to refer them out, and then all I can do at that point is hope that they do seek help. I can just be happy knowing that I gave them my best reference and take it from there.
So is that something, like as soon as you see an early warning sign, you're going to try to help that person and get them out there to get that help?
Yes. And I will even ask them too. I'd be like, do you feel like you are struggling with food? Do you feel like you need help? Are you stressed out? And I ask them these questions first. I almost give them like the benefit of the doubt. But if I find them defending their rules that they've created for themselves or this behavior that they're doing, then I know that they're starting to spiral.
Okay.
Yeah. So like, for example, if someone is extremely obsessive with their scale weight, I might even tell them, we're not weighing yourself. And then if I find them defending that number and that scale weight, where they're like, no, I have to weigh myself. What are you talking about? How are we going to keep track of my progress? Then I'm like, whoa, red flag.
Yeah. Obviously I'm not doing any bikini competitions, but I was like obsessed with the weight on the thing. And I'm like, I got to stop that because if I want to gain muscle, it's going to go up. So I just needed to like step away for a while, like in the past year.
And you just need to, you know, trust in whoever you're working. Make sure whoever you decide to work with, you have a good relationship with, you feel very comfortable with, and that you're, you know, the way you want to approach this prep is the same. Don't hire a bro coach if you want to do flexible dieting. Don't hire a flexible dieting coach if you want a structured meal plan and bro diet. Don't hire a female coach if you want a male coach. For me, I actually have always had male coaches. I've never had a female coach. And, you know, I've been through my own ringer of coaches, but, you know, I think once you find someone that you really have a good relationship with, you find that there's good chemistry, you're comfortable with them, you need to stick with them. And of course, getting you the results that you want as well.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you for telling. Oh, sorry, Carly, what?
Sam, how did you find Nicole?
Actually, I followed her on YouTube probably like early 2017 when I was like thinking about doing a bikini competition. And I was like researching on YouTube and trying to find people that I could, that would explain it well. And then I followed her on Instagram. And then after I got into a bro coach, who I hated, and I hated everything that he was telling me, I like decided that I wasn't going to prep or anything like that. And then, after I had the baby and then I was still having like the itch, I was like, you know what? I'm going to try it like the flexible dieting way. And then I just reached out to her and then here we are.
And Sam's been awesome. She's made so much progress.
Yeah, so far I'm excited to see what else is to come in the future. And I'm really excited about like actually doing a competition now. So that is very nice too.
Damn kids.
Yeah. I'm glad I waited though.
Yeah, if anything, the more you wait and build, the better your physique is going to look.
Absolutely. And I'm glad I didn't just like jump into it. Like you explained with all the like female reproductive problems. I'm glad that I had Cannon, not got him out of the way, but had him. And then now I can focus on myself for a while and like what I want to do with this. And then not have to worry about not being able to reproduce or have something get into a situation where I may harm my body.
Absolutely.
That's what I was scared about from the beginning. So now I have a perfect little baby and I can try.
And fully focus on yourself too.
Yes. Yep.
Carly, what were you going to ask?
I just had a question about the actual competition. So does it go by age or weight divisions? Like how is that split up? Like, is there like a master's?
I'm going to talk just about the females because the guys are different because they do have weigh-ins. But for the females, it's mostly through height. So there's different classes based on their height. You're going to have it's like the alphabet. So A would be the shortest class, and then it'd go B, C, D, E, F, all the way up to Z if there's a million competitors. But depending on how big the show is going to be how many classes that there are. And then it's normally by like 5 foot to 5'1", 5'2", to 5'3". So everyone's the same height. We don't do weigh-ins. They don't care what you weigh on stage. Absolutely not. They just care how you look. So then there's different divisions. There's open, which where everyone can compete in, depending on if you are, you know, older or younger, it doesn't matter. Open is what it means, open. And that is where you can qualify for a national show. So if you get top two in the NPC, you can qualify for a national show to where you would compete at for your pro card. Now, there's other divisions, too. So there's Masters, which is 35 and over. Sometimes we'll do 35 and over division, 45 and over, and, like, even 55 and over. And then sometimes they do a teen division, which I'm actually not a fan of. I don't think teens should be competing. So they'll have, like, 16 and 19. I think that's too young for this.
Yeah.
Also, another division is Novice. And Novice is for a competitor that has never, ever competed before. So it's almost like beginner in a way. So those are all the classes.
Okay.
You said for men, they do have to weigh in?
Yeah, so the bodybuilders and men's classic physique have to weigh in. Men's regular physique, the guys that wear the shorts, do not have to weigh in at all. That's just on height.
That's interesting. I never knew it was based on height. I don't. I guess I just assumed it was on age or what.
Well, that's the thing, too, is, like, sometimes whenever I'm competing, I'll ask girls, like, what their weight is because we're in the same height class. And I like to see what different weights look like on different heights, if that makes sense. So, like, for me, I'm a very small competitor. I've always been told that I need more muscle. And, like, the physiques that I, you know, really love and, you know, and I'm enjoying, like, how they look and I think, like, they're going to do great. I always ask them what they weigh and it's always more than I think it is. So, like, you could have a girl that's 125 pounds on stage standing next to a girl that's 105 pounds, but they're the same height and they're going to look way different.
Oh, I can only imagine, yeah.
Yeah, so unfortunately I wish it was like height and weight. I feel like it would be more fair, but it's not always about fairness.
Well, anything else that you think we missed or want to talk about?
Not that I can think of. I mean, I just appreciate you guys having me on today.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Yeah, thank you guys again, and I hope you all have a great rest of your day. Feel free to find me on Instagram. It's just Nicole Ferrier Fitness. And there you can see more of my bikini prep and just talking more about, you know, macros and training, which that's what we all love.
Do you still do your YouTube channel?
I do, but I'm going through a revival with that. I've done YouTube since I was 14, so I needed to take a little hiatus as I was pursuing my business and transitioning to doing that full time, and also just moving into a new house and going through a lot of life changes. It was hard for me to keep up with the Instagram and my clients and my business and also doing YouTube, because unfortunately I don't have someone edit my videos. I'm the full show. I do everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah, thanks. Thanks again. It was really awesome.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys. And yeah, I hope you all have a good day.
Thanks. Anything we want to cover Broken to Barbell before we go?
No, I don't believe so.
No. Thanks again to everyone who signed up for the walk.
Just the walk.
All right, Nicole, do you want to help us say goodbye?
Sure.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Goodbye.